Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to EMS Live. This program is recorded.
Welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. Today is Tuesday, June 27th, 2017. This is Joe Cavelli with the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. It's a pleasure to have you along with us today. Today is the end of June, or near the end of June, which is very hard to believe, and August is right around the corner, and we understand from our guests here that Summerfest starts tomorrow, so that's an exciting time for Milwaukee and the general Wisconsin area. So if you're taking part in that, have a terrific Summerfest this year. I wanted to mention a couple EMS items that have happened since the last time we broadcast the program. Last week on June 21st, Governor Scott Walker signed into law the EMT language changes. This changes the way, not the way EMTs are doing their job, but basically the classification of how they're titled. And I didn't recommend you refer to the PAW website at paw.us for particulars on that. But in general, the EMT language has not necessarily been replaced, but if you look at an overall group, we're being called now emergency medical practitioners. And EMTs, the basic designation from an EMT has been dropped, and it's no longer EMT paramedic, it's just paramedic. So there are some classification changes, and suggest you refer to the PAW website for that. But the governor signed that bill into law last week. Chris Anderson, who is a frequent guest on this program and also a PAW Board of Directors member and officer with the association, was appointed by Governor Scott Walker to the EMS Advisory Board with the state. Chris is the operations director at Bell Ambulance in Milwaukee, so we send a special shout out to Chris and congratulations on that recent news. And then finally, a reminder that the Wisconsin Stars of Life nomination period is open right now until August 1st. The statewide event recognizes emergency medical practitioners or those involved in EMS for their high-level contributions, volunteerism, and professionalism. The dinner and awards banquet for Stars of Life will be held in Green Bay. It's affiliated and a part of the Paramedic Systems of Wisconsin Conference on that Thursday, September 21. The Stars of Life has been produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin since 2005. So this group's done it a number of years, and we sure invite your involvement in that. You do not need to be a PAW member to nominate someone or to have someone be nominated to receive that award. One person will advance from the group to represent Wisconsin at the National Stars of Life event in Washington, D.C. in June 2018. Our representative last year was Dion Eske. Dion did a terrific job, and I know she'll be passing the torch, so to speak, to the next recipient of that honor. The great thing about this is it's an awards recognition program, so every person nominated to the Wisconsin Stars of Life is presented with that award, and so we leave that up to you for the nomination. For more information, you can refer to the PAW website at paw.us, and you can easily download the nomination packet. Now on to our program for today. Wisconsin is not immune from the national opioid epidemic and spike in deaths related to overdoses, and EMS, of course, is on the front line in responding to these types of calls in both urban and rural areas of the state, and surely the role in the opioid battle just continues to escalate as this epidemic continues to move forward. We've got some statistics that we'll share on the other side of our break, and then also we're welcoming the team from the Milwaukee County Emergency Medical or Emergency Management Office here in just a few minutes, and we'll introduce them. Today's program is going to last about 30 minutes. It's sponsored today by EMS World Expo, Astia Health, and EMS Medical Billing. This is EMS Live in Wisconsin. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break.
I'm Dr. Alex Summers, an EMS Medical Director and CEO of Astia Health, and I'm excited to introduce you to the next frontier of healthcare delivery solutions. At Astia Health, we are leading the way in utilizing cutting-edge technology to provide the missing link between community paramedicine providers and higher levels of care. Our innovative solution combines our proprietary software with our custom-built access to care telemedicine cases. These cases facilitate a comprehensive virtual examination, allowing a hospital-grade evaluation to be performed in the field. I look forward to helping you incorporate this solution into your business. Astia Health, access to quality healthcare anytime, anywhere. Look us up on the web at astiahealth.com or call us toll-free at 888-885-4434.
Join thousands of EMS professionals at the largest EMS conference and trade show in North America, October 16 to 20 in Las Vegas. PAW has partnered with the EMS Expo Group to provide our members with a $100 discount on a three-day conference pass and or free exhibit hall passes. Just use promo code PAW, P-A-A-W, that's again PAW, P-A-A-W, when registering at EMS World Expo. Their website is emsworldexpo.com. Again, emsworldexpo.com.
EMS Live in Wisconsin is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. To speak with the co-hosts or guests during the live show, dial 646-929-1081 and press number 1 on your keypad. Or send an email to emslive@paaw.us. And now, back to the program.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Cavelli. And it's a pleasure to have you with us today. I'd also like to welcome into the program our guest from the Emergency Management Department at Milwaukee County. And welcome group to all of you. I know you can go ahead and unmute your phone and we'll bring you into the program today. We have with us Dr. Colella, Director Christine Westrich, and EMS Division Director Ken Sterning. Hello, welcome back.
Hi, Joe. Thank you for having us.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to have you with us. And I know this is a very serious topic. Milwaukee is not immune, nor is the state or nationally, to the opioid epidemic. I know the governor called a special task force earlier in the year on this, and they issued a report and some alarming statistics with this. So let me just briefly go over this before we get started. But the opioid-related overdose deaths more than tripled in Wisconsin from 194 deaths in 2003 to 622 deaths in 2014. So quite a substantial increase in about 11 years, given those statistics, and probably even higher than that, given today's epidemic and how we've seen it really take hold on, unfortunately, our country, states, and citizens here locally. What's happening in Milwaukee County with this, since Milwaukee County has really a dense population, and can you tell us a little bit more about the trends you are seeing there?
Joe, Ken here, and I'll talk. You just mentioned about the deaths in the state, and over the past 4 years, the deaths in Milwaukee County have more than doubled, and we were at a little bit more than 300 in 2016. So it looks to be like almost half of the deaths in the state of Wisconsin. Our number of patients that we're seeing that we're delivering Lanoxone to increase from 2015 to 16 by almost 300, 272 patients. And the number of doses were about 450 more in 16 than we did in 15. We are seeing a fairly consistent distribution of patients who are receiving naloxone as far as age-wise, between the 20s and 60s. Those percents per every 10 years of age group remain pretty consistent over the past 3 years. We are seeing a unequal distribution in gender, though, with about 65% of people receiving naloxone being male. And then also, and I think one of the challenges in data retrieval and EMS folks is really identifying race. But we are finding about 40% of the patients who are receiving naloxone in our area are listed as white. And then the remaining have a distribution, and some are, again, fall into the unspecified categories because sometimes it's difficult to ask that of the patients. Our deaths-wise, again, we also are seeing an unequal distribution with 70%, a little more than 70% of the patients being listed as white. What we are seeing is a number of patients who are receiving two or more doses of Lanoxone, and about 40% of the patients that we give Lanoxone to, we give more than one dose to. And we have some self-reporting of patients who, in 2016, about 116 of them said that somebody administered two or more doses, whether it was a buddy, peer kind of delivery of Lanoxone. And about 40 patients had three or more doses of Lanoxone. And I think Dr. Claus is going to speak to some of the mixing of medications that we're seeing. And then lastly, on our transports, about 90% of the people that we give Lanoxone to are going to the hospital by the EMS. So that is, we have about 5%, 5.5% that refuse once we treat them and they're decisional. They refuse, and then unfortunately about 5% of patients are being transported to the medical examiner. So that's a little bit of a landscape of kind of patients we're seeing and doses delivered in the Milwaukee area.
Thanks very much for the details on that, Ken. I would imagine, Dr. Colella, that from an EMS perspective, EMS and ambulance providers are probably seeing a revolving door of some type with the overdoses and administering naloxone and then being repeatedly called to the same patient potentially and administering it again. It seems like a cycle has been established almost. We see this in other means and delivery of ambulances and local EMS. What do you think takes its toll on, or do you think this takes its toll on first responders?
Yeah, Joe, that's a great question. You know, I'm seeing from other media sources in other parts of the country the same kind of issue where EMS is starting to develop a bit of this compassion fatigue. And, you know, I think the hard part is when you're encountering this, how do you keep focused on the fact that what really is driving this is addiction? So really trying to understand the science of addiction, at least for me, it helps to put this in a perspective of, illness and not just behavior choice. And I think it's fair to say nobody wakes up saying, today's the day I want to become a heroin addict, right? This is usually a consequence of a lot of things, you know, it's complex lifestyles, genetics for addiction. So I think, you know, trying to treat this as an illness first, And then backing into how do you better prepare providers to look at it from that perspective. I think the hard part, again, looking at other sources of media, is when people's decisions or addiction starts to interfere and interact with other parts of life, like their children or society. And I think that's the hard part for EMS providers and other healthcare providers, including, I imagine, law enforcement, where it's hard to see the consequence of this addiction. I think how fire departments can and EMS providers can do this is trying to get good training on addiction and then having other good resources within your department to try to focus on, provider wellness, shoring up things like EAP and other means. I think you alluded to it in the question, it isn't just about the naloxone opioid crisis. I think, you can look at other disease processes like trauma and other things where it could be a revolving door as well. And unfortunately, EMS are the front lines of this. So the more that we can do to educate providers on issues like addiction and then try to develop safety nets within the EMS services so that they're well cared for. I mean, I think if you look at the data on EMS wellness, It's a profession that has a high toll on its providers. You know, there's high issues of health issues and depression and also, other factors like suicide. So, I think whatever we can do to help prepare our providers to manage this task would be part of our responsibility as well. So I think that's, again, it's a complex question, but I think framing this as addiction more so than just people's bad choices can maybe help to address the compassion part of it.
That's a very appropriate perspective. We're discussing EMS's role in the opioid battle. We're discussing it with the team at Milwaukee County Emergency Management. If you're listening on the phone and do have a question, just press number one on your keypad, and we gladly bring you into the conversation to ask your question. If you are listening on the internet or would like to send us an email, the email address is emslive@paw.us. Feel free to reach us either one of those ways during the live program here the next 15 or 20 minutes. A follow-up question, Dr. Coella, is should all opioid patients be transported to the hospital? I think that's really a good question. And then probably a follow-up to that is when is it safe to allow them to refuse transport?
Again, great question, Joe, and poignant. Ken mentioned earlier that in our system, we transport about 90% of the patients that we treat with naloxone to the system. That's a fairly high number, I think, compared to other places, and there are probably drivers behind that. You know, I think when you look at the data on who is safe to not transport, there are a couple of good papers that have been published in the last few years that basically show when EMS providers care for patients of overdose from a single agent, so heroin is the one that's cited in the literature, and naloxone is administered and the patient returns back to normal mental status with normal vital signs, that there have been no demonstrated deaths as a result of them that release in the short term. So, you know, I think the one approach could be if providers are fairly certain of those parameters, you know, again, single opioid alone, and then returning back to normal. You know, the evidence says that the likelihood of death in the short term within 4 hours is fairly low. Now, I think to bring in some of the data from our EMS system, our medical examiner death rate the patients who had died in Milwaukee County in the time period that we looked at, 72% of them had co-ingestants involved. So it was not just heroin alone. It was opioids, and there's a number of opioids that are tested for, but opioids in addition to other things like alcohol and other medications. So I think the tricky part from the EMS provider is, how do you screen for co-ingestants? Because I think the chance of bad outcome is much higher when patients have other things on board. So if they're drinking alcohol, if they're taking, you know, other medications, benzodiazepines and others, and then layering on top of that opioids, I think the risk is much higher for a bad outcome. So, I think when it speaks to who is safe to be left behind or to allow refusal of care, you know, I think you need to use good checklists to try to understand that. We have a tool in our scope of practice that has a paramedic go through a four-question assessment to see how safe is somebody to refuse care. So I think trying to build in tools to make it objective would be helpful for providers to use. Again, trying to screen out whether or not you think that this is just one agent or not. And, you know, even in the hospital setting, it's difficult to screen that. We're not screening the number of drugs in point-of-care testing. So I think it's a challenge.
Thank you, Dr. Coella. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sure, just the second part. So when is it safe to allow people to refuse? Again, I think normal vital signs, normal mentation, perhaps. So in our policies, we ask that there is a safe environment that the patient's left in. So you don't want to leave a patient, you know, alone. You want to also make sure that there's no other co-ingestants. So I think those are the guidelines that I would suggest people should pay attention to.
Excellent perspective. Thank you, Dr. Coella. I appreciate that very much. We're discussing EMS's role in the opioid battle. We're talking with the team at Milwaukee County Emergency Management, Ken Sterning, Dr. Coella, and Director Westridge. This is EMS Live. We'll be back after this brief message.
EMS Medical Billing Associates provides complete fire and EMS billing for service calls, alarms, and data management. EMS Medical Billing Associates, experienced, professional, accurate. Find them on the web at emsmedicalbilling.com.
Don't miss a beat of Wisconsin EMS action. Listen to EMS Live or download any previous show on demand in the archive And now back to the program.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Covelli, and we're discussing EMS's role in the opioid battle. And, you know, Wisconsin EMS or EMS in general is definitely on the front line with this. And I guess a question to the group is, what else can EMS do to ensure a safe landing for these patients?
Ken here. I'll start off with that one. One of the things that we have implemented is pre-notification from the EMS provider to the hospital, and we use the terms opioid alert. In given report to the hospital, they will identify they have an opioid alert patient and then proceed with the rest of their report. And our goal with that is, while the EMS provider has given the treatment of naloxone to the patient, if they have to administer other doses, they certainly can, and is able to manage the airway and all those things. So it's not that the hospital needs to get prepared to medically treat the patient, but also, more importantly, to give them a heads up of maybe contacting social services or any of their addiction specialists, if they have that services within that institution. And the handoff piece a little bit to really, as Dr. Kloss said, start to get the person into the addiction treatment things, and not so much for the preparation that the hospital may need to do to take care physiologically for the patient. So we have the EMS agencies might consider that pre-notification to the hospital to say, heads up, we're bringing in this type of a patient.
Yeah, and so I think the other thing that we're trying to focus too is we're fortunate in our community to have a mobile integrated healthcare program that's been up and standing for a bit. So trying to leverage that resource to look at this as another tool to try to provide care for our patients. And in this model, MIH can do a number of things. They could offload or off-burden the normal street paramedic to come in and manage a patient after a patient, for example, refuses care. It's a way that they can do some other training and education to a patient or family member, perhaps connect them, making sure that there's a follow-up appointment through a 2-on-1 center that helps them with addiction, and also even as far as supplying or prescribing naloxone. Again, using MIH as a tool to help offset the costs and burden of the disease.
Naloxone has been referenced quite a bit in this conversation. I know it's obviously it changes the effects of heroin overdoses and, of course, opioids. One thing that Attorney General Brad Schimmel has done to help minimize the cost, because there's a cost to treating this, of course, is to come up with discounts, incentives, and rebates with various eligible entities. So ambulance services are definitely included in that. If you'd like more information on the discounts for naloxone, it is through Amphistar. It's an arrangement that was first established last year with the Department of Justice. The contract was renewed this past February for another 12 months. In addition, Attorney General Schimmel and his staff, Johnny Coromneos, has been our contact on this. They informed us that Adapta Pharma has also been included in the rebate program. That's a nasal administration. And so if you'd like more information, you can refer to the PAW website or just search out that information. Again, that would be the Wisconsin Department of Justice. There's another question that you all had shared with us, and I'd like to Director Westrich speak up with this one. We hear a lot from our members that they often don't know when a deadly product is in their community until it's unfortunately too late. How can our responders get better communication or intel before it's too late? Director Westrich, do you mind taking that one for us?
Yeah, sure, Joe. Thanks. There's a lot of technology out there, and Milwaukee County is looking at a whole myriad of components that exist. And specifically, we're looking at two different grants, and one is really what Dr. Colella and Ken just spoke to with this MIH and then this warm handoff in the emergency department. So Milwaukee County is implementing technology called Pulsera, and you can Google that as well. But Pulsera is an app that can sit on a tablet or on a phone, Android or iPhone, and it really is communication between the paramedic and the hospital directly. And what we're looking to do is establish an opioid alert, which we're already doing, but through that technology. And with that alert to not only the hospital, it will alert our mental health hospital here, known as the Behavioral Health Division, and it will send an alert to Team Connect. And Team Connect is a, you know, one or two people that the grant can afford for a few years to get it up and running. And these people then would receive the information about that patient that overdosed, and they would connect with that person that same day or the following day and provide them all of these 211 resources or other resources that exist here in Milwaukee County for that patient. So that's a pretty significant grant. We're looking at that with the University of Wisconsin-Madison, their School of Medicine, and it's $1 million over the course of 3 years. But that's a pretty important piece of technology to bring those addiction resources directly to the patient, and the person that's responsible to make that connection is, in fact, the paramedic. So we're hoping we'll find out more about that in actually about a month, whether or not we receive that funding. A second technology that we're working on, something called OddMap, which is Overdose Mapping Analysis Program or Application Program. And what that does is it allows in real time for opioid overdose patients to be tracked. So today, part of the problem is it takes toxicology reports. You know, we have the paramedics that may be on scene and given paraphernalia in the room or even peer witnesses. They can describe the event, but, you know, some of that is experience-based or perhaps subjective. Until we truly get that toxicology report, we don't know exactly what component of opioids they've overdosed from, et cetera. Well, regardless, this mapping technology would report those incidences, and then it would report it real-time on a dashboard. Again, we're looking at tablet implementation and then also phones as well. And this grant is through the National Institute of Justice, and it is the same. It's $1 million over the course of 3 years. And this grant, though, is law enforcement focused. So currently in Milwaukee, our regional office, the high-intensity drug trafficking area, which is known as HIDA, there's HIDA across the state as well. There's a HIDA region up in Brown County and Green Bay, and then, of course, our Milwaukee region. But here in Milwaukee, they're already using this mapping technology. But again, it's only law enforcement, so it's not connecting the dots here to our EMS data. But if we get this grant, we're looking to actually make that connection, which will be really significant. These two pieces of intelligence, if you will, or intel, really connect that paramedic real time to what's going on in their community. And I think it'll be really significant. We're very optimistic we'll receive the grant money, you know, and if maybe 6 months we can report back to you on how that's working out with new data on top of what we've already talked about today.
That'd be terrific, Director Westrich. That would be very, very good. And it would be interesting to see how that could be used, that technology could be used in other areas too, in intel gathering for minute-to-minute information.
Very good.
Please let us know.
Yes, I'll let you know, but I did forget to mention a third technology, which is really focused on the fire side. So that mapping technology for law enforcement, hopefully, again, as you just suggested, coming back in 6 months to report on, but we're looking at a company called First Watch, and you can also Google that. They've got a really great website. They also have a technology called First Pass. But we're looking at that the first item called First Watch, and it's already in place here in the North Shore community of Milwaukee County, which is 7 cities and villages, but they're using First Watch today, and that's on the fire EMS side, and that is providing policymakers, elected officials, and, of course, paramedics and those in the field, the real-time data that I just described. So that's another piece of evidence that we're looking to implore and, you know, really help our first responders get that intelligence immediately.
Excellent. Thank you very much for sharing that information with us, and we hope that there's a favorable outcome in getting in receiving those grant monies to make that happen. Sounds very, very good. Well, I know that we're almost out of time with our 30 minutes, but is there anything in closing that you'd like to offer or share that maybe we haven't covered yet?
You know, Joe, we really appreciate these opportunities to speak with you, and we're interested in doing this on a quarterly basis, and perhaps we can get some callers to, you know, on the next episode that we can answer any questions about what we're doing here in Milwaukee that perhaps would apply to smaller areas in Wisconsin or even Minnesota to your listening audience. We'd love that opportunity.
Okay, well, we really appreciate you offering it as well. Thank you very much all for your time today at Milwaukee County Emergency Management, and congratulations on the work that you're doing. There's more to be done, obviously. This is not over by any means. There's more to do and to address and to help the citizens in their recovery. Dr. Quillell, you phrased this up quite right. It's a disease, an illness, very habitual, and it's a matter of breaking the routine there. And EMS, of course, on the front line has responsibility in this, in responding to community needs. Thank you all very much for your time and information, and appreciate the conversation on this too.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
Okay. Thank you. And enjoy Summerfest if you're taking in those festivities. And we'll look forward to seeing Dr. Koala's food truck there at some point in time. We had a little conversation before we started. So thank you all. The next EMS Live in Wisconsin program is Tuesday, July 11th, starting at 9 o'clock. Of course, these programs are taped or recorded, I should say, so you can always click them for on-demand playback. Please feel free to do that with this podcast or any of the previous podcasts. They can be found on the PAW website at paw.us. The program is conducted or streamed live the second and fourth Tuesday every month. We sure invite your comments to us at emslive@paw.us. That's our email address, emslive@paw.us. On behalf of the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin, this is Joe Cavelli. Thank you for listening to today's program.
EMS Live is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin, which is dedicated to healthy, sustainable ambulance and emergency medical services delivery in Wisconsin. Program comments can be emailed to emslive@paaw.us. That's emslive@paaw.us. Thank you for listening.